Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host. Today is a day for police. The 21st Precinct will be visiting it and will learn all about the shotgun. This is from 1954.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Waters. Wait a minute, who is this? Shot your husband? Where? What's the address? Yeah? Yeah? 45 or 49? Well, where's the gun?
You are in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
All right, you stay right there. I'll send the officers right over. Yeah, right away.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
The 21st, 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st. I was working my night tour, 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. The 4 to 12 tour had been exceedingly quiet, due in part to a heavy downpour of rain, which began early in the afternoon and continued until nearly 11. Troublemakers like to get wet no more than anyone else, and a good rain keeps them off the street. By midnight, when I turned out the platoon for the late tour, the sky had turned clear, although the streets of the city were still wet and glistening. After the men had marched out the front door of the station house, I went into my office to dispose of some accumulated paperwork and await the appearance of Patrolman Daniel Ritchie. He had requested to see me when he came off the job at midnight in regard to a leave of absence for the purpose of attending to personal business in Florida in connection with his father's estate. At 12:25 a.m., while I was so engaged, Sergeant Waters, who was supervising patrol, instructed his operator, Patrolman Elton Tyler, to pull their car to a stop at the curb near a call box on First Avenue, close to the northern boundary of the precinct.
Okay. I want to ring in.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Collins.
Sergeant Waters, box number 11. Let me talk to the lieutenant, will you, Vince?
Yeah. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
21st Precinct, Lieutenant Goldman.
Sergeant Waters, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
I went up there on First Avenue to take a look at that condition.
Yeah?
There's about a foot of water in the street at that spot, Lieutenant. Looks like the catch basin in the sewer is stopped up there.
Excuse me, officer.
Just a second, lady.
What did you say, Sergeant?
A woman just walked up and was speaking to me, Lieutenant.
Oh.
I'll be with you in a minute, lady.
All right.
All the water from the rain has just hung up there, Lieutenant. I think it'd be a good idea to notify the borough president's office and have them send a crew up to clean out that catch basin.
All right, I'll notify them.
Officer.
In a second, lady. They ought to get up there as soon as they can, Lieutenant. The traffic's slopping around that water.
Okay, I'll notify them right away.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Detectives have a woman thief upstairs. Ring in about 15 minutes. You might have to ride down to the 19th and get a policewoman to search her.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. What is it?
I wanted to tell you I just shot my husband.
Yeah?
I did. I just shot him.
Where is this?
In that house there next to the corner I live in there.
Where is he?
Upstairs in the flat.
All right. Let's go have a look.
I couldn't help it. I really couldn't.
Just a second. Tyler.
Yes, Sergeant.
Come on.
Yes.
What did you shoot him with?
A gun.
I know it must have been a gun.
Yes, sir, Sergeant.
Come on with us. We've got a shooting.
Yes, sir. What kind of gun?
A shotgun, I think you call it. You know, gun about this long.
Is he dead?
I don't know. I did it and I ran out of the house right away. I ran out of the house to get some help. We got no phone, you know.
In here?
Yes, that's right. Second floor.
I'll get the door.
Yeah.
Hope it's not locked. Didn't take my key.
It's not locked.
Why did you shoot him?
I warned him. I warned him and he still came after me. I warned him to stay away from me.
All right. Where is the shotgun?
It's upstairs. I left it upstairs.
When did this happen?
Just now, just a minute ago. I came out to call someone, call some help.
Must not have been a very loud shotgun. Nobody in the building heard it.
It was loud, all right. It was the loudest thing I ever heard.
Which apartment up there?
In the front.
That one?
Yeah. See, I left the door open when I ran out.
Whose gun is it?
His.
All right, go ahead.
I wish you'd go first.
No, you go in.
All right.
Well, where is he?
In there, in the bedroom.
Where's the gun?
In there, too.
All right. You go sit over there a minute.
Where?
Over there. Sit down on the couch if you want.
All right. I think I ought to. Sit down and...
Okay, Tyler.
Yes, sir.
Use your foot to push it all the way open.
Okay, Sergeant.
Brother.
Stay there. Keep an eye on her.
Yes.
She shot him all right, but good.
12 gauge. Double barrel shotgun.
We'll leave it lay there.
Yes.
Okay.
She wasn't kidding.
See? See what I mean?
Yeah, I see. Go on down and ring in, Tyler. Tell him what we got.
Yes, sir. Right away, Sergeant.
Close that door.
Yes, sir.
Is he dead?
I think so, yeah.
Well, he couldn't say I didn't warn him. I warned him over and over again. That'll be in my favor, won't it, that I warned him?
Lady, take my word for it. You'll need a lot more than that in your favor.
On instructions of Sergeant Waters, Patrolman Tyler went downstairs to the street and walked to the police call box. From there, he notified Lieutenant Gorman, the desk officer, of the homicide. Lieutenant Gorman, in turn, immediately informed the 21st Detective Squad and the Manhattan Communications Bureau. He then rang into my office and gave me what information he had obtained. I instructed him to have a car come by the station house to take me to the scene. As I walked out into the muster room, Detectives Novak and McInerney, who were on their way, stopped long enough to tell me that Lieutenant Matt King, the commander of the 21st Squad, had been called at his home, as is required in all homicides and all other serious crimes. In the meantime, the Communications Bureau dispatched an ambulance to the scene and notified the Manhattan East Homicide Squad, the New York County District Attorney's Office, the Medical Examiner, the Photographic Bureau of BCI, and, because a firearm was used, the Ballistics Bureau. In addition, six patrolmen from the 21st were sent to control the crowd of curious people who always gather on the sidewalk and to keep back behind their doors other tenants of the building awakened by the excitement. When I arrived and started up the stairs to the second floor, an ambulance attendant from the Beth David Hospital passed me as he was going down. I continued on up.
Who's down there, Vaquero? Eisman?
Yes, Sergeant?
Yeah.
Get a 95 tag out of your car and bring it up here.
Hello, Sergeant.
What'd you say, Sergeant?
Captain.
A 95 tag. Get one out of your car and bring it up here.
Okay, Sergeant.
And what'd the ambulance attendant have to say?
DOA, Captain.
Mm-hmm. Who's here?
Only Novak and McInerney of the 21st Squad so far, Captain. Nobody's got here from the Homicide Squad yet. Want to take a look around?
Yeah.
Back there. Oh, just a second, Captain.
Now, listen, you people. You were told to get inside your places and stay there. Now, get back in there. There's nothing to see here.
A
That's just the way the door was standing open when we came up the stairs.
Uh-huh.
That's her, sitting on the couch. Want to talk to her, Captain?
In a minute. Let's see in there first.
Yes, sir. They've got two kids, you know.
Where are they?
At a fresh air camp. Girl 10, the boy 7.
Rough.
Yeah. She told me he came home about midnight. Said he was about 2/3 drunk.
Yeah.
She said he started after her, started to beat her. She ran in here, into the bedroom. She closed the door and pushed that chair up against it. He started pounding on it. She told him not to come in. Then she said he started pounding on the door harder. She went to the closet there and got the gun. She warned him if he came in, she was going to shoot him. Finally pushed a chair out from under the doorknob and came in. She fired. Fell right there. That's her story.
Her aim was sure good.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's talk to her.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Captain.
Tyler. Mrs. Wheel, this is Captain Kennelly, commanding officer of the precinct.
You want to tell me how this happened, Miss Wheel?
I told him how it happened. The sergeant here and the detectives asked me. I told them how it happened. I don't feel like telling it anymore.
You're going to have to tell it a lot more times, Mrs. Wheel.
What's your first name, Mrs. Wheel?
Eva.
Mm-hmm. How do you spell the last name?
W-E-A-L-D.
Your husband's name is Joe?
Yes, that's right.
I understand you have two children.
Yes, Margaret and Joseph Jr.
How old are they?
She's 10, the boy's 7.
Where are they?
Well, they left Monday for a fresh air camp. They've been going for 2 years now. 2 weeks in the country. It's nice. Does them a lot of good.
What happened tonight?
Well, he was out drinking. He's an electrician. He gets off work 4:30 in the afternoon. He didn't show up for supper and didn't show up all night. Mm-hmm. Came home about 11:30, 11:45, something like that. All I asked him was where he was all night. And he started to push me around. I said, well, Joe, I'm not going to stand being pushed around anymore. So I fought back a little bit. That didn't stop him. He pushed me around some more. So I ran in there in the bedroom. I closed the door and I put the chair behind it. He started hitting on the door and I yelled to him. I yelled, Joe, you're... So I fought back a little bit. That didn't stop him. He pushed me around some more, so I ran in there in the bedroom. I closed the door, and I put the chair behind it. He started hitting on the door, and I yelled to him. I yelled, Joe, you're not going to touch me. You're not going to put your hands on me. He said he was going to kill me. So I went to the closet and got out the shotgun, and I said to him, I yelled through the door. I yelled, Joe, if you come in here, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to shoot you. So he did. And I did.
How did you learn to shoot?
Oh, I knew. He showed me. He always wanted to take me duck hunting. He always wanted me to go with him, but I never did. He just showed me how to use the gun.
Was that the first time you ever fired it?
Yes, that was the first time. Listen, what can they do to me, do you know? I've got two kids to take care of. Can you tell me what they're going to do to me?
Well, we don't decide that, Mrs. Wield. We just find out what happened and report it to the district attorney. He takes it up with the courts. We have nothing to say about what they do with you.
Oh. He would have killed me if I didn't do it. You don't know him. He got wild, really wild all the time. You can ask anybody in the building here. They'll tell you.
Yes, well, we'll find out all about it. What?
His mother. Who's going to tell her? I don't want to do it. I don't want that job.
Where does she live?
A couple blocks from here, that's all, on York Avenue.
What's her name?
Mrs. Wheel, too. Isabel Wheel. Who's going to tell her? Will somebody from the police department do it?
Yes, somebody from the police department will do it.
That's good. I wouldn't have nerve to face her.
You had the nerve to shoot her son.
I know, but that's different.
You are listening to 21st Precinct, a factual account of the way police work in the world's largest city. Now, back to 21st Precinct and Captain Kennelly.
Within a few minutes, two detectives from the Manhattan East Homicide Squad and a photographer arrived.
Pictures of the body and the surrounding conditions were made from every possible angle. Lieutenant King, the ranking officer of the detective division on the job, began to dictate to a stenographer from the homicide squad an accurate description of the body, its position in the room, and all other physical details that might later be needed as evidence before the grand jury or in court. A deputy medical examiner appeared, and while he was making his examination of the body, a detective from the ballistics bureau arrived to take custody of the shotgun used in the homicide. The deputy medical examiner made a preliminary report that death was due apparently to a shotgun charge in the chest and ordered the body taken to Bellevue for an autopsy. While awaiting the arrival of the morgue wagon, a detective took fingerprints of the deceased. And finally, Patrolman Elton Tyler, the first officer on the scene, made a search of the body, removed all property except clothing, and placed a UF-95 identification tag around the wrist. The body was then removed to the morgue. Meanwhile, detectives of the 21st Squad and the Homicide Squad began the investigation by questioning Mrs. Weald and some of her neighbors. At 2:10 in the morning, when all that could be accomplished at the scene of the homicide was done, Lieutenant King ordered Mrs. Weald taken to the station house. As Patrolman Tyler, the arresting officer, and Detective Novak accompanied her to the 21st Squad office on the second floor, Lieutenant King leaned against the filing cabinet and watched them enter.
Over here, Mrs. Will.
Where? Oh, over here. Do you want me?
Yes, that's right. Hello, Tyler.
Hello, Lieutenant.
We met over at your place. I'm Lieutenant King.
Yes, I remember.
Come into my office, please. Go back, Mac. Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Tyler.
Yes, sir.
Inside, Mrs. Will. Just have a seat right there.
Here?
Yeah, that's fine. Shut the door, Tyler.
Yes.
Mrs. Weald, you know you're in serious trouble.
I don't care. I really don't care.
There are a few things I'd like to get straight.
I told you everything I remember.
Mrs. Weald, I'm interested to know how your husband could chase you around the house, threaten to beat you up, threaten to kill you, throw furniture at you, pound on the door. I'd like to know how he could do all these things and be so quiet about it. None of your neighbors on either side of you or upstairs or downstairs heard a thing. How do you account for that?
I don't know how to account for it.
Well, that racket he was making, chasing you around and threatening you, seems probable that someone should have heard it, doesn't it?
Well, when I fired the shotgun, that made a lot of noise. Nobody heard that either.
Mm.
You didn't, did they? You didn't find anybody heard that?
I'd like you to tell me something else.
Yes?
When this officer here came up the stairs, when he came up with Sergeant Waters, the door to the bedroom was closed almost all the way. Isn't that right, Tyler?
Yes, sir, Lieutenant, that's right. Sergeant had me use my foot to open it the rest of the way. He didn't want me to touch the doorknob.
Mrs. Weald, did you close that door when you came out of the bedroom?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, it was closed.
It was closed? I must have closed it.
Mrs. Weald, there's something else I'd like to get straight.
Please, I'm very tired. It's awfully late. It's the middle of the night.
I'm tired, too, Mrs. Weald. We're all here at this hour on account of you.
All right.
What I was going to ask about is this. It's not very clear exactly when your husband got home. What time was it?
I told you, 11:30, 11:45, and he was drunk, very drunk.
You're sure it wasn't earlier?
I'm positive.
Well, I'm not so positive, Mrs. Weald. Do you know Mr. Doyle, who lives in your building on the top floor?
What's he got to do with it?
Mr. Doyle said that he was coming down the stairs. He was on his way out for a paper, and he passed your husband going up. Mr. Doyle said that was about 10 o'clock.
I don't care what Mr. Doyle says.
Mr. Doyle says he distinctly remembers the time. He waited until the end of a radio program before he went out for a paper.
I told you, I don't care what Mr. Doyle said. Joe didn't get home till 11:30 or 11:45. Besides, what difference does it make? I told you I killed him. There's no argument about that, is there?
No.
I told you I did it, and I told you why I did it.
But I can't understand why nobody heard it. Why nobody heard either the fight or the shot.
Well, maybe they're all deaf. Listen, what about my kids? What happens to them? Is somebody going to go up to the fresh air camp after them? Or maybe they'd better stay there. That'd probably be best.
Probably. Do you have anyone that could take care of them?
No, I've got nobody. Nobody at all.
What about your mother-in-law?
Did somebody tell her?
I've got a detective out trying to locate her.
Wasn't she home?
I don't know. I haven't heard back from the detective.
Well, she should be home. Where else could she go? Look, what time it is. It's 2:30 almost.
Well, this detective had other things to do. I don't know whether he got to her yet.
Oh.
This same detective was in a bar and grill down the block from where you live. You know the one I mean? Your husband used to spend a little time in there.
I know the one you mean.
This detective talked to the bartender. Now, the bartender told him something that checks out, Mr. Doyle, pretty close on the time that your husband got home. Bartender said he remembers your husband left the place about 9:45 in the pouring rain. Thundering and lightning in the pouring rain. You said he was drunk and nasty, didn't you?
He's always drunk and nasty when he comes out of there.
Yes, the bartender said something like that, but he said it was 9:45.
He might have left there 9:45, but he didn't get home till 11:30 or 11:45.
But where did he go for 2 hours?
How should I know where he went? He came home and we got in this fight and I didn't ask him. I didn't care. Please, now, I'm tired. I'm tired of answering questions. I've been answering questions almost all night now. I killed him. I told you I killed him. What else is there to it?
There's a lot to it, Mrs. Weald. Why you killed him is very important.
I killed him because he was coming after me.
Did you love him?
I hated him. I really hated him, but I didn't kill him because I hated him. I killed him because I was afraid he was going to kill me.
Now, Mrs. Weald, let's be honest, huh?
I'm being honest.
The medical examiner said he'd been dead for at least an hour before midnight, probably more.
How could he tell that?
Oh, he can tell, all right.
Even if it was so.
And you know it's so.
I do not.
You know that he came home about 10 o'clock, that you had your fight then, that you killed him then. You know it was thundering and lightning out. You know that's apparently why nobody heard the shot. Now, isn't that true? Wasn't it around 10 o'clock that you fired that shotgun at him?
Can I smoke? Has anybody got a cigarette?
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Have one of these.
Thank you.
It's all right.
You like a light?
Yes. Thanks.
Now, why did you tell us that you killed him about midnight when it was really about 10 o'clock?
I don't know. Sounds kind of silly, I guess. As long as I killed him, why should I try to keep it a secret?
What did you do between 10 o'clock and nearly 12:30 when he came downstairs and told the officers?
I just sat there. I just sat there in the room. I just sat there and thought about the 11 years I've been married to him and kids and the place we live in. Him being drunk all the time. And his mother. I just sat there and thought about everything.
For 2 hours, you just sat and thought?
No, not all the time. Sometimes I just sat. I didn't think.
Were you worried that you killed him or sorry?
I wasn't sorry. I wasn't even worried, not at all. I just couldn't think of anything that I could say to his mother. I tried to think of something to tell her, but I couldn't think of a thing, so I just sat there.
For over 2 hours, with your husband's body in the next room.
Well, yeah. But the important thing was I couldn't think of anything to tell his mother.
I don't wonder. I don't see what there is you could tell her.
The interrogation of Mrs. Weald continued. In the meantime, I had been out on patrol of the precinct. At 1 a.m., a fire truck responding to an alarm had collided with a taxicab on Lexington Avenue, and two firemen were slightly injured. I had been out with the battalion chief of the fire department looking over the scene of the accident and assisted him in gathering the information he needed for his report. It was after 4 a.m. when I returned to the station house, where Lieutenant Gorman was desk officer and Sergeant Waters was on telephone switchboard duty as I walked around to sign the blotter.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Waters.
Sergeant?
Hello, Captain.
Red, what's doing?
Nothing much, Captain.
All right, bring them in.
Oh, did they book that Mrs. Weald on the homicide yet?
Okay. No, sir, not yet. Mm-hmm.
Well, Lieutenant.
Yes?
Coley's on his way into the house with a set of keys left in the ignition of a parked car.
Okay.
All right, Red.
Yes, sir, Captain.
All right, Coley. Come on in with the keys.
Sergeant.
Oh, yes, sir, Captain.
Have we got somebody on a fixer tonight over where that upholstery company fire was?
Yes, sir. Underwood is on the job there.
I'd like to talk to you, if you don't mind.
You'll have to make inquiries over here, ma'am.
I don't want to make inquiries. I want to talk to him, the captain.
Lady, the desk officer will take care of you. The lieutenant.
I saw a lieutenant upstairs. He didn't give me any satisfaction. I want to talk to a captain. You're a captain, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
I'm Mrs. Weald. Mrs. Isabel Weald. It was my son she shot. She shot him in cold blood.
Well, the case is in the hands of the detectives, Mrs. Weald.
I don't care whose hands it's in. That lieutenant upstairs wouldn't give me any satisfaction. So I want to talk to you.
What is it you want to talk to me about, Mrs. Weald?
They wouldn't let me talk to her. They wouldn't even let me see her.
Now, what's the necessity in seeing her?
She killed my son, didn't she?
There's an investigation in progress, Mrs. Weald.
That That lieutenant had her up there in that little office upstairs, and he wouldn't even let me go in and talk to her.
Well, you can see her in court tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning I'll be busy making funeral arrangements and busy getting those children, my grandchildren, out of that fresh air camp. In cold blood. And he wouldn't even let me give her a piece of my mind. I told him, the first time he brought her home to meet me, I told him he was making a big mistake to think about marrying her.
Mrs. Weir...
I could have predicted this. I could have predicted it 10 years ago that something like this would happen. Those poor children. And poor me to raise a boy so that you could shoot him down in cold blood.
Look, there's no use talking to me, Mrs. Weir.
When that detective knocked on my door and told me who it was, I knew something like this had happened. She was out to do this. You can just write that down in your little book.
Mm-hmm. Did you tell all this to the detectives?
Of course I told it to the detectives. I told them how he wouldn't go home from work. How he'd come to my house and I'd tell him that she was going to do this. He wouldn't believe me. I'd sit him down and I'd give him a drink and I'd tell him what she was like. I had to keep a bottle of whiskey especially in the house for him. In cold blood. And those poor children, the most gorgeous children you ever saw. They look just like their grandfather.
Mrs. Weald, it's 4 o'clock in the morning almost. I'd suggest that you go home and...
There she comes. I want to talk to her.
Now, Mrs. Weald, they're going to book her. You can't talk to her now.
I have my rights.
You don't have a right to talk to her now.
I want to book her, Red.
All right.
Just stand on that closer to the railing.
Here?
That's right.
It's beyond me how you can treat anyone like that with decency like a human being.
Name is Eva Weald, Lieutenant.
W-E-A-L-D?
That's right, yes.
I wish you would use your maiden name!
Mrs. Weald, if you don't stop interfering, I'll have to ask you to leave the station house.
3145 First Avenue.
It was my son, my baby, the baby of my family. That's not interfering.
Age 31.
Have you been out for a meal yet, Captain?
No, not yet, man.
I'd like you to tell the captain why I couldn't see her upstairs. I'd like you to tell him what you told me. Go on. Tell him what you told me.
It's not necessary for him to tell me, Mrs. Weil. You have no right to interfere and interview a suspect during the course of the investigation.
I'll see what my rights are.
All right, Mrs. Weil. You'll be taken to the 19th precinct where they have cells for female prisoners.
I don't care.
She don't care about anything.
And you'll be taken to felony court in the morning. Meantime, you're entitled to have us make 3 telephone calls for
There's
you.
There's nobody I want to call.
There's nobody that would talk to her.
All right, wait in the back room with her, Tyler.
Yes, sir. Right this way, Mrs. Weir.
Well, how do you like that? She didn't even have the decency to say hello to me. Not even the decency to do that. After she shot down my son in cold blood.
The way she described it, Mrs. Weir, it wasn't exactly cold blood.
No, I'd like to know what it was then.
Well, that's up to the courts to determine.
A lot they know. To kill a woman's son like that. It was the same as if she'd taken that gun and aimed it at me. Just the same.
It's a good thing you weren't there, Mrs. Weald. She might have done just that.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Waters. Sitting on a ledge where? A man or a woman? Yeah? Yeah? What floor? What floor? Well, does she threaten to jump? Yeah? Yeah?
And so it goes, around the clock, through the week, every day, every year. A police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh-and-blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring, or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct, a factual account of the way the police work in the city of New York.
The 21st Precinct and the Shotgun. Well, let's lighten the mood a bit right now with a comedy bit. This is from a warrior's salute to the state of Maine, and Mary Livingston reads a poem about Maine.
Now, fellows and girls, since that great American poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was born in Maine, we feel it only fitting we should bring you some sort of poetry this evening. So we're going to bring you some sort of poetry. Here comes our poetess now, Miss Mary Livingston.
Broadway gang, and thank you, Frank Sinatra.
Sinatra?
Yes, it's really a thrill meeting you, Frank.
Now, just a minute, Mary. I'm not Frank Sinatra. I'm Rudy Vallee.
Oh, well, I just missed by one generation.
One generation. I may be a little older than Sinatra, but I'm in better shape than he is right now.
Gee, that's terrible. You ought to see a doctor.
I'll be all right. Now, Mary, how about that poem for the servicemen and women from the state of Maine?
Okay.
What's the title of it?
Maine is on my brain. Yeah.
Maine is on your brain.
Also Sinatra.
Go ahead, read your poem.
Maine is on my brain. There are many Maines in this world so wide. Some are in the open and some are inside.
So far, nothing.
Wait till I get rolling. There's the water main which sprinkles the grass, and the main neath the street so filled with gas. There's a main street in every village I hear, and a main on a horseway in front of the rear.
I can't make head nor tail of this.
Quiet. But of all the Maines I love the best is the state of Maine, away out west. The end.
All right, just a minute, Mary. Maine is our easternmost state. Honest, Mary, talking to you as a friend, I feel that I should tell you that your poetry is horrible.
Oh, yeah? I'd like to have a nickel for every tomato you caught in your megaphone.
Grapefruit. Nowadays, it would be called a victory garden. Well, Mary, here's someone you ought to say hello to, an old friend of Jack Benny.
Who is it?
Fred Allen.
Old is right.
Well, Fred, look who's here.
Hello, Fred.
Well, Mary, this is a surprise.
Where are you staying in town, Fred?
Well, I couldn't get into a hotel here in Hollywood unless I wanted to hop bells. So I went to a little auto court out on Ventura Boulevard.
How far out?
Seattle. It's quite a little place. It's quite a place. It has a slogan, every room needs a bath.
Gosh, you didn't have to go that far out. You could have stayed at Jack's house in Beverly Hills.
Oh, I know, but going through all that fingerprinting. A nickel every time I want to go in and wash. That meter on the roller towel. Oh, no. It's not worth it, Mary. Say, by the way, what do you hear from old easy come, hard to let go?
Well, I'm waiting for Jack's first letter now, and I know he's going to be furious when he unpacks his bag.
Why?
Because I helped him pack, and at the last minute I had a change of heart and took back my girdle.
Oh, really? Well, the Pacific is a large area. He can spread out there. I hope he took his hot water bottle.
No, Carol Anders is with him.
Oh, a substitute, hey? Well, everything is ersatz nowadays.
Yes, and I'll knock his ersatz off if he doesn't behave.
What did you say, Mary?
But Jack did take some other things, Fred. Shirts, some pajamas, socks, and a hairbrush.
A hairbrush? For what?
Carolina, the bag was full.
Oh. I wondered about the hairbrush. I know Jack parts his hair with a tweezer. He split it down the center, that one hairy. But tell me, hasn't Jack made a trip to the South Pacific before?
Well, he started it once years ago, but didn't quite make it.
Oh, I heard about that. He got seasick, and Magellan put him off at Cape Horn.
Must have been before my time.
A little before your time, yes, Mary. He was going with Queen Isabella in those days. I think Columbus moved in and spoiled the whole thing.
Pardon me, I hate to break up this sparkling dialogue, but it's time now for Gloria DeHaven and Frank Sinatra to lift their voices in song.
If I am in the way, Mr. Valley, I shall step aside.
Oh, hello, Gloria.
Hiya, Mary.
Gloria, don't make it too obvious, but how about giving me a knockdown to the voice?
Oh, sure, I'd be glad to. Mary Livingston, this is Frank Sinatra.
Gee, this is a thrill.
Gee, this is a thrill.
Gee, this is a thrill.
Gosh, this is a thrill.
These thrills come to you through the courtesy of the Armed Forces Radio Service.
And now Gloria and Frank will sing Come Out" from their latest picture, Step Lively.
Come out.
Come out wherever you are.
Come out, come out.
I know you're not very far. I wish you'd hurry, 'cause I'm inclined to worry. These arms of mine are open.
Come on out, wherever you are. I know you're not very far. If I sound too eager, my love life has been meager. So won't you be so faithful, faithful, show up, gal, and be a pal.
Come out wherever you are. Take off from your Shangri-La.
Won't you quit relaxing, Jackson, 'cause it's the final bar. So come out, come out, come out,
wherever you are.
And now hurry up, we have a train to catch. And who's on the train? None other than the mysterious traveler himself. The program's called I Won't Die Alone, and it's from 1948.
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear the story I call I Won't Die Alone. Our story begins in 1931. Two young men are speeding along in a car on a lonely West Virginia road at 70 miles an hour. There's a tight, tense look on the face of the driver, Steve Martin, as he takes the curves on the road without slowing down. His companion, Chuck Williams, wipes the perspiration from his face with trembling hands. He turns and watches the road behind fearfully, now and then glancing at Steve's face for reassurance.
Turn on the radio, Chuck. Let's see if they got an alarm out yet.
Yeah, okay. Well, what do you think our chances are, Steve?
Hard to say. It all depends on how fast the cops spread the word.
The two men robbed the Third National Bank of Lewisburg of over $250,000 shortly before closing time. Word has just been received that the two bank robbers are now driving east on Highway 6B towards the Allegheny Mountains.
That's not good.
State Police Car 9, take up position at junction of Highway 11A and River Road.
They're moving fast.
State Police Car 10, take up position at junction of Highway 3 and Highway 6B.
Steve, Highway 6B, we're on it.
Yeah.
That is all. Stand by for further orders.
Steve, you gotta turn back. We're headed for a trap.
Take it easy, will you? There's still a chance. 20 miles ahead, there's a small dirt road that'll detour us right around them.
20 miles? We'll never make it, Steve. Isn't there any other road we can turn off on?
No.
Are you sure?
I was born in these parts. I know every inch of the country.
Steve, let's ditch the car and cut towards the mountains on foot.
Are you crazy? It's 40 miles to the mountains. We'd never make it walking. We've got to keep driving. It's our only chance.
We'll run right into that trap, I tell you. They'll be waiting with Tommy guns. We'll be dead pigeons.
Okay, then we'll be dead pigeons.
I'd give up my share to haul right now to be out of this. You gotta get me out of this, Steve. You gotta.
Oh, shut up.
Look, Steve, if you were to let me out of the car and keep on going yourself, I might be able to get away. The cops would be so busy chasing you, I'd be able to give them the slip.
You lousy rat.
Now, look at it my way, Steve. There ain't no use both our getting caught. That don't make sense.
You're great when it comes to sharing the dough, but when the heat's on, you want out.
Yeah, but I'm willing to pay for it. You can keep my share of the bank, Carl. Now, that's fair enough, ain't it? Huh?
A lot of good that dough'll do me if I get caught, but I'm sick of hearing you whine. All right, it's a deal. If I get through, the dough's all mine. If I don't, well, I don't.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks. I'll never forget this.
Come on, get out.
Which way do I go, Steve?
Head across the fields until you hit a small stream. Then head upstream for about 6 miles. There's a railroad water tower there. You ought to be able to hop a freight.
Thanks, Steve. Well, I'll be seeing you.
Yeah. So long, Chuck.
You show up. See for the paper that got Steve.
Yeah. Now let me see that paper. It says here they caught him yesterday afternoon at 5. An hour after I left him.
What'd you do, run out on him?
No, I didn't run out on him. I just played it smart. What are you looking at me like that for? There wasn't no sense in both of being caught, was there?
No, I guess not. Where's the dough?
What dough?
The $254,000 you got in the bank job.
Steve had the dough.
What? Look what it says there in the paper. Huh? Go ahead, read it.
Martin, when captured, told police he knew nothing about the stolen bank money. Police believe that Martin's unknown companion escaped with the loot. But I didn't fly. I didn't. Steve had that though when I left him.
Then why didn't the police find it when they caught him?
There's only one answer. Steve stopped and hid the dough someplace before they got him.
Yeah, that must be it. Steve's too smart to risk being caught and having all that dough taken away from him. Poor guy. They'll probably throw the book at him.
Where have you been so long? Well, what happened at the trial?
They give him 25 years.
25 years?
Mm-hmm.
How did he take it?
He didn't bat an eye.
Maybe you'll think things over and squeal on
me. Oh, stop sniffling, will you? He isn't the kind of a guy to do anything like that.
Yeah, sure. Why should he want to squeal on me? Besides, if he did, the cops would find out that I didn't have the bank, though. That it's Steve who got it. He wouldn't want that to happen. Sure. Why, with good behavior, he'll be out in 18 or 19 years. And he'll have all that dough hid.
I'd rather have the 18 or 19 years than the dough. Well, it's been nice knowing you, Chuck.
Wait a minute, Flo, don't go.
What?
Why not stick around? We'd make a good team. We don't need Steve.
We don't, huh? And just what would I get sticking around? You haven't got brain, muscle, or dough. What's the attraction?
Listen, Flo, stick with me and I'll get dough. I've always gotten what I wanted in the end.
Without Steve, you haven't got a chance. He had all the brains, all the guts.
Yeah, and where did it get him? You notice I ain't behind bars. And I'll get that big dough yet.
3 cheers. When you do, look me up.
Seventeen years passed. 17 years in which earth-shaking events took place. With the passing of time, Steve Martin became just a memory to Chuck Williams and Flo Duval. During the 30s, Chuck struggled desperately to make money in a half dozen petty rackets, but failed miserably. However, with the coming of the war, his luck changed, and in the years that followed, he thrived on the black market. And with his newfound wealth, he was able to win Flo Duval. 1948, found Chuck Williams a happy, prosperous citizen without a care in the world.
How many times have I told you to knock before you come into this office?
Look, Napoleon, save that big shot stuff for your stooges.
Same old flow. I guess that's what I like about you, baby.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, you've got that superior look on your face again. Who are you planning to knife now?
I just got word that our old pal, Steve, is getting out of prison tomorrow.
Steve Martin?
The one and only. Been 17 years now. It's a long time.
Yeah.
Think I'll drive down to the prison. Be there when Steve gets out.
What for? You haven't bothered to write or visit him since the day he was sent up.
I know. But it's a matter of unfinished business between the two of us.
Unfinished business?
Yeah. To be exact, $254,000.
You mean you're going after that dough that Steve has stashed away?
That's just what I mean.
But you gave up your share of that bank dough the day you and Steve separated.
Man can always change his mind.
Chuck, leave Steve alone. That money by rights is his. He paid 17 years for it. Besides, you don't need it. You got more dough than that already.
Maybe so, but that isn't going to stop me from getting that $254,000. And you ought to know by this time I always get what I go after. I got you, didn't I, baby, huh? Remember, baby, when those gates open and Steve comes out, let me do the talking.
Don't worry, I will. I don't want any part of this business.
Relax, baby, relax. When I get that 254 G's, I'll buy you a fancy diamond bracelet. Then you'll feel better.
Hey, boss, they're opening the gate. Is that him?
No. Steve's twice as big as that guy.
Chuck, that is Steve.
Can't be. That guy looks at least 6. You're right. It is Steve. Stay in the car. Hey, Steve. Steve, over here. What's the matter? Don't you remember an old pal?
Oh, Chuck. Well, I didn't recognize you at first.
Well, here, yeah, pal.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of surprised to see you after all these years.
Well, I've been living in South America most of the time. Only got back a year ago. I know I should have written you, but I never was any good at that.
Boy, yeah, sure smells better out here.
Come on, let's get in my car. I got a surprise for you.
Huh? Surprise?
Yeah. You remember Flo Duval, don't you? Well, here she is.
Hello,
Steve. Hello, Flo. Hey, it's nice seeing you again.
Come on, Steve, get in. We're driving you to town.
Thanks, Chuck.
Okay, Felix, back to town.
Right, boss.
You don't look well.
It's just this prison parlor, Flo, and 17 years.
Well, it's all behind you now, Steve. A few weeks of good rest and good food, you'll be a new man.
I'd like to believe that.
Just take my word for it. I'm never wrong.
Well, you seem to have done all right, Chuck.
Yeah, not bad. I own a nightclub, a bowling alley, used car business, a couple of apartment houses. I can't complain.
I'm glad to hear it.
I'm not forgetting an old pal, either. Now, Flo and me want you to come and stay with us until you get on your feet. You know, a house guest.
I'd rather not, Chuck. I don't want to put you out.
Put me out? Huh. Listen to the guy. Well, we got sweet servants, everything. Steve, I just won't take no for an answer.
A week passed, then 2 weeks, during which Steve Martin did little other than eat and sleep and take long walks. Chuck Williams played the role of the gracious host to perfection, and his guest lacked nothing in the way of comfort. So concerned was Chuck with his guest's welfare that he always knew exactly where Steve was and what he was doing. Then one day, as Chuck had known it would happen, Steve came into his office for a private chat.
Hey, you busy, Chuck?
No. Have a seat, Steve.
Thanks.
What's on your mind?
Well, while I was doing time, my old man died and left me a small farm in West Virginia. That's where I was born and raised, you know.
Yeah, I remember you telling me.
Well, I'm going back to the old farmhouse and settle down there for a while.
I see. Well, anything you say, Steve. Only let's keep in touch, huh?
Yeah, sure thing, Chuck.
When are you thinking of leaving?
Tomorrow morning.
Well, that's soon, huh? Well, we'll have to have a little farewell party tonight, okay?
Yeah, fine. I'll see you later.
Right you are. Felix, come in here.
What's up, boss?
My pal, Steve, getting ready to make his move.
Guess he can't wait no longer to get his hands on that dough.
Looks that way. He's leaving tomorrow morning for a small farm he's got in West Virginia.
West Virginia, huh?
Yeah. Farmhouse can't be more than 30 or 40 miles from where he stashed the dough.
Is there any chance he might have hidden it on the farm?
Nah. Cops caught him before he got that far. He hid that dough someplace off Highway 6B.
How many of the boys you want me to take along?
Take four. I don't want any slip-ups. Watch him day and night, and without being seen.
Just leave it to me.
Sooner or later, he'll lead you to the dough. When he does, well, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Okay, then. You better start packing.
The next morning, when Steve Martin took a train for West Virginia, two very inconspicuous men were seated at the other end of the coach he was riding in. They watched him get off the train at an all but deserted station in West Virginia, but made no move to follow him. As the train started off, Steve hired a car to take him to the farm he'd inherited. And it was dusk when he finally reached the deserted farmhouse. On a heavily wooded hill 100 yards away, Felix and a companion watched through field glasses as Steve lit a fire in the farmhouse and prepared to settle down for the night. In the days and nights that followed, Felix and his men took turns watching Steve Martin's every action. And every evening, Felix would phone Chuck Williams and report that Steve hadn't made a move as yet.
How many times have I told you to knock before coming into this office?
What's the matter, Napoleon? Aren't things working out?
I told you to lay off that Napoleon stuff. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
That must be Felix. Hello?
Boss, Felix.
Well, what's happening?
Nothing. He still hasn't made a move. All he does is fish and read.
What about visitors?
He hasn't seen anyone since the day he got here.
Are you sure he didn't give you the slip during the night and get the dough?
Not a chance. I got two boys watching the house at night.
Well, maybe he knows he's being watched, and that's why he hasn't tried anything.
I bet my last buck he hasn't spotted us.
Nothing ever goes right unless I'm running the show. I'm leaving tonight for West Virginia. I'll see you in the morning.
Okay, boss. I'll be expecting you.
That's a farmhouse down there, boss. Look through the field glasses. You can see it just like you were standing in the front yard.
He's sitting on the porch reading.
Yeah, reading and fishing is all he does. He hasn't been more than a couple of 100 yards away from the house since he got here.
Well, he must have spotted you. That must be the reason he hasn't made a move.
How could he have spotted us? You can see how careful we've been.
Well, I'll wait a couple more days. See what happens. If he doesn't move soon, I'll have to think of something else.
Leaving Felix to continue his watch over the farmhouse, Chuck returned to the village and registered at the village inn. The hours that followed dragged interminably, and the hatred that Chuck felt for Steve Martin grew with each passing hour. In the evening, Felix drove into the village and reported that nothing new had occurred. Four more fruitless days went by. Chuck Williams was unable to contain his fury any longer. He got into his car and drove to within a half mile of the farmhouse, then walked the rest of the way to where Felix and his men were hidden on the hill.
Boss, what are you doing here?
I got tired of waiting.
You better get down, boss, or Steve Martin's liable to spot you.
Forget that. We're through playing a waiting game. We're going to move in on him.
Move in on
him? Yeah. Maybe after a light workout, my pal Steve will be willing to tell me where he stashed the dough.
Ah, that sounds more like it. I never did go for this cat and mouse game.
Before we're through with him, he'll be begging to tell us what he knows. Hello, Steve. Got lonesome for you. Decided to pay your call.
I thought you'd get around to it sooner or later.
You don't sound very glad to see me. That's a fine way to act towards a pal who was your host for the last 3 weeks. Didn't I treat you right?
Yeah. That's what made me figure I hadn't seen the last of you. What do you want?
I'll give you one guess.
I haven't got it.
I know you haven't, but you know where it is.
So what? That money belongs to me, not you.
That's where you're wrong, pal. That dough belongs to the guy strong enough to get it. That's me.
Okay, then you go ahead and get it. Should I let him have it, boss?
That's not up to me, Felix. That's up to Steve. Well, pal, you gonna dig up that dough for me?
No.
You're not as smart as you used to be. You know, I'll get what I want in the end.
I wouldn't count on it.
Okay, Felix, I guess it's up to you and Slim now.
They'll talk. Won't you, pal? That's it, pal. All right, try getting on your feet. Here, let me help you.
How is he, Felix?
It's out cold, boss.
He always did have a stepping streak. You think in his condition he couldn't take all that punishment.
We give him any more, he's liable to kick off.
You sure?
Yeah. He's already got a couple of busted ribs, and that beating around the head didn't help him.
We gotta make him talk. We gotta.
You have to figure out some other way.
Throw some water in his face.
Okay. He's come to, boss.
Prop him up in a chair.
Come on, you. There.
Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Felix here wants to try the water treatment.
Water treatment?
Yeah. Now, why don't you play it smart and tell me where you hid that dough? Won't talk, huh? Okay, Felix.
Wait, I'll talk.
Well, it's more like it. Where is it?
You could never find it alone. I'll have to take you to it. Just you and me.
What's the matter with Felix coming along?
Just you and me.
Okay, pal, okay. Only I'm wondering if you're in condition to make it. Hey, Felix.
Yeah, boss.
Give him a few drinks, try to fix him up.
Right.
As soon as you've done that, Steve and me will be on our way.
An hour later, Steve, with the assistance of Felix, tottered to Chuck Williams' car and got in the front seat. Chuck slid behind the wheel and started the motor. As he drove off, he waved to Felix triumphantly. In a few minutes, the farmhouse had faded from view. Steve, huddled in a corner of the front seat, fought to keep from crying out every time the car hit a rut in the road. Now and then, he opened his pain-filled eyes to look out the window. Chuck watched him with satisfaction as he drove.
How much farther is it?
You drive about 5 miles until you reach a small gravel road. Well, you'll see a big sign saying the Devil's Caverns. You turn right there and go 2 miles.
The Devil's Caverns? What are they?
They're a big tourist attraction in these parts during the summer. Hundreds of huge underground caverns that run for miles in all directions.
You mean that's where you stashed the dough?
Yeah. The best place in the world.
How do you know you'll be able to find it again?
I know every inch of the caverns. When I was a kid, my old man worked as a tourist guide there. I learned my way around from him.
Okay. But you better find it, though. I'm warning you.
I'll find it. Now, you should be reaching the gravel road in a couple of minutes. Turn right, then it's 2 miles to the Devil's Caverns. This is it. Park the car in that shed over there.
Place sure looks deserted.
Well, no one ever comes here until June.
Is that the entrance to the cavern? That door set in the rock?
Yeah. You'll have to shoot the lock off the door.
Is this okay?
Yeah. No one will ever be able to spot the car here.
But you said no one comes here until June.
No one does. I take chances. We'll need a flashlight.
I got one. Come out this way. And if you're thinking of any tricks, don't. Remember, I got this gun, and you're in no condition to try anything.
Yeah, you saw to that.
How come you didn't hide out here when the cops were after you?
Well, there wasn't any place to hide the car. Shed wasn't here 17 years ago.
Tough. And it's such a lonely-looking place.
Yeah. Well, you ought to be able to blow this padlock off with one shot.
You better stand over there. Yeah, that does it. How much further is it? Seems like we've been walking an hour already.
Right up ahead.
Sure you can find your way out again? All these cabins look alike to me.
Yeah, I know the way out.
Sure it's damp in here. Hey, what was that?
Oh, probably just a rat running past you. Place is full of them.
Seems to me it's taken a long time to find that place where you hid the dough. If you're trying anything...
Here's where it is. Now hold the flashlight a little higher. That's it. I hid the suitcase behind this rock.
Got it?
No, not yet. Here it is.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, all right. I can still recognize it. Open it up.
Well, there's the dough.
Yeah. Still in the bank wrappers. Look at it. Over a quarter of a million bucks.
What's so funny?
Answer me.
So you're the guy who always gets what he goes after in the end, huh?
Yeah, now I got the dough. And I'm asking you again, what's so funny?
Look at the money. Go ahead, look at it.
I'm looking. What about it?
Yeah, you're looking, mastermind, but you don't see. All those bills are goldbacks.
Goldbacks?
Yeah, that's right. In 1933, the government called in all goldbacks. That's how the kidnapper, Bruno Hauptmann, got caught, trying to pass goldbacks after the government had called him in.
You mean that dough is no good?
That's just what I mean. You try passing any of that dough and you'll end up doing time.
And you've known all along that dough was no good?
Ever since 1933. Knowing it was worthless, I never intended coming here for it. But you make
it. I gotta let you have it, you rat, for leading me on like this.
Well, why don't you?
Come on, pick up that suitcase. Let's get out of here.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to tell you, Chuck.
Tell me what?
I'm staying here.
You're staying here?
Yeah, that's right.
Now look, I've had enough out of you. I start leading the way out.
I guess you didn't understand. I said I'm staying here.
Get gone or you'll get it right between the eyes.
That doesn't scare me. You see, Chuck, there was something else I didn't tell you.
Something else?
Yeah. I didn't get out of prison on good behavior. I got out because the doctor said I was going to die in 3 months.
You're going to die in 3 months?
Yeah, that's right. I thought I'd die peacefully on my farm. Only you wouldn't let me do that. So I've decided to die here with you as company.
Steve. You can't do that. You can't do that, Steve. You gotta get me out of here. You gotta.
I don't have to do anything. I don't wanna.
But get me out of here, Steve. I'll make it worth your while. I got dough. I got lots of dough.
It's too bad. You won't be able to take it with you.
Steve, I'll give you 100 G's. 200 G's if you get me out of here.
It's not gonna be tough for me to die because I only got 3 months anyway. But I'm gonna enjoy watching you. You're gonna get weaker and weaker as you plead with me to lead you out of
no.
here. Then you're going to get desperate and try to find a way out by yourself. But you'll never make it. You'll go wandering from one cabin to another, and then in the end, you'll probably wander back here to find me dead. And your flashlight's going to go out. Huh? You'll be all alone in the dark with the rats and the bats.
Oh, stop it! Stop it, or I'll
and
shoot!
And if you go weaker, the rats are going to close in on you before you know it. Ah.
Steve. Steve. I didn't mean it. You made me. Steve, say something. Gotta get out of here. Gotta get out of here. Help! Help! Help!
This is the mysterious traveler again. Did you enjoy our little trip? What happened to Chuck Williams? Oh, the poor fellow was found dead a month later when the cabins were opened for the summer tourist trade. Seems Chuck had wandered from cabin to cabin without being able to find his way out. Evidently, he'd gone mad in his last hours, for he was found with his pockets stuffed full of bills. Goldbacks. Now, I recall another case in which two ghosts came face to face, only to discover that... Oh, you have to get off now. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. In tonight's story, all characters were fictional, and any resemblance to the name of an actual person, living or dead, was purely coincidental. In the cast were Maurice Tarplin, Joe Julian, Art Carney, Elspeth Eric, and Alan Manson. Original music was played by Paul Taubman. The Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Robert J. Arthur and David Cogan. Listen next week to a tale titled...
Death Writes a Letter.
Another strange and suspenseful tale of the Mysterious Traveler. Don't miss the chilling tale titled Seven Casks of Death, written by Maurice Tarplin, your Mysterious Traveler, which appears in the current issue of Dime Mystery Magazine, now on sale at your local newsstand. This program has come to you from New York. Another program of tense and dramatic action will follow in just a minute. Stay tuned to the station for Official Detective. Carl Caruso speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.